Ready to light that fire by doing the things that make you come alive? Welcome to Health Raisers, a podcast for wise women. I'm your host, Dr. Nadine. I left a soul-crushing medical career full of bad news and evolved into a joyful health integration coach, helping hundreds of women find their healthy. You're more than your dress size. Stop putting up with toxic relationships, swallowing your true emotions, and sacrificing your mental health. Stop using your body as a battlefield. You're always giving. You deserve to put yourself first, not just for your sake, but for those you love. Wise women, let's make ourselves a priority right now. It's time to raise some health together. Today, my guest is Dr. Ogubadejo. He is the lead of the Institute for Comprehensive Spine Care with offices in the New York metropolitan area. He is a spinal and orthopedic surgeon who has been practicing for 20 years. So lots and lots of great experience. I'm thrilled to have you here today.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor being here with you.
We're going to be talking back pain and essentially how to take care of your back and avoid surgery, when to get surgery and how to exercise and sit and pick things up. So lots of great things coming up. But let's start with the first question. What do you believe is optimal spinal and back care health? What's a nice program to make sure you're doing that?
So optimal health for your spine and back actually begins when you're younger. So I tell all my patients we're ideal when we're teenagers, and after then it's downhill. So the best way to optimize your health is by maximizing your core strength, maintaining flexibility, having a diet that's conscious of nutrition in terms of maximizing your bone strength, meaning have a diet rich in calcium, rich in vitamin D, because your spine, not only does the bone matter, but the disc matter as well. So if you fortify your bone early on with vitamin D and calcium, then you're reducing your risk of having osteoporosis, osteopenia, and things that can affect the bone as we get older. When it comes to the disc, the most important thing is to be biomechanically sound. So don't do anything that can cause undue injury to the back. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you're strengthening your core, engage in a good exercise program throughout your life. You want to do things like leg raises, planks to strengthen your core, maintain good health, balance both strength training along with aerobics to maximize your core strength. If you keep that in mind throughout your life, then most likely you'll have very good spine health throughout.
So what about a person who may not have paid attention to that as early? So some people are more athletic and pay attention to exercise early on in life, especially if you're in a family that emphasizes that. But say you're not surrounded by people who necessarily think about exercise or nutrition, but as you get older, you start to value those things. What do you say to those patients?
What I say to them is it's never too late. Even if you're starting later, as long as you're conscientious, as long as you have presence in your activities, then you can always get your health optimized. If you're behind, meaning you already have pain, you're already restricted, then go in and see your doctor. Doesn't have to be an orthopedic surgeon. It could be your primary care doctor. Could be a physiatrist. Have imaging done so you know exactly what you're starting with. And then they'll give you a program to get you more idealized.
Okay. You mentioned specific core exercises. I'm a yoga instructor. I teach in the water, the chair, and on the mat. So besides some of the things you mentioned, you know, we really do focus on core strength. We focus on balance to strengthen muscles and bones. Other specific types of exercise, do you think? For instance, would Tai Chi be a good option? What other ideas come to mind?
I do like Tai Chi because it involves movement, it involves flow and form. Mm-hmm. So that's very good. The things I typically think of when it comes to core strength are things involving being on the ground and using gravity to strengthen your core. So doing leg raises, doing planks, even doing sit-ups and crunches, as long as you don't put too much strain on your neck. Mm-hmm. I like even using a medicine ball and doing a medicine ball smash. As long as you vary your routine, keep it interesting so it's not rote and boring, then most likely you'll stick with it and you'll get to the end that you need to be. Yeah. Some people I mean, add one more thing. Some people may have a hard time getting started on their own. So okay. if you're already having pain, perhaps have your primary care doctor or your physician who you work with send you to physical therapy. Mm. That way you can have a very specific personalized plan. Mm-hmm. The physical therapist will look at you, see what your deficiencies are, and devise a plan strictly for you.
Fantastic. So some of my students are afraid of getting up and down off the floor, or maybe they can't because of their hip knee replacements. They just don't feel comfortable or weight issues. So options there, because again, that's why I teach in the chair and I teach in the water so that those people can still get the benefits of strengthening muscles and bones.
Absolutely. So even in a chair, you can do leg raises in a chair. Mm-hmm. You're still taking advantage of gravity. You can do seated knee tucks, which is a great way to strengthen the core. Water exercises are amazing because you can do a lot in the pool. It limits how much gravity affects you when it comes to pain. Mm-hmm. However, there are many routines within water that you can do to help strengthen your core as well. And a lot of people look forward to being in water. So actually like water as an option.
Yeah, fabulous. Yeah. Okay, fantastic. Common myths about spinal health that you've come across in your experience?
The most common myth that I've come across is that once you have an injury, then that's it. That's not coming back. And you're ruined forever. And that's not true. That's not true. Depending on the nature of your injury, there's still a great chance you can get back to normal health and get back to the life that you want. Another myth when it comes to my work specifically is if you have spine surgery, that spine surgery will only set you back. That spine surgery is dangerous. And, you know, if you get spine surgery, you won't achieve the goals that you want. I spend a lot of time convincing patients that the reason I chose my field is to make people better. Like I'm not a masochist. I wouldn't pick something. I wouldn't go through all these years of schooling to pick a field that would just depress me and make me sad because I'm making people's lives worse. Mm-hmm, you know, I enjoy making people's lives better. I enjoy educating people about the spine, learning more about the spine, updating my techniques and what I can offer my patients and whoever needs surgery, giving them what they need and getting them back to their lives. The goal is to get you better.
Bringing you Health Raisers is possible because of these incredible sponsors. Feeling the need for a little pampering? Do you want an escape from the hustle and bustle of daily life? MAC Salon and Day Spa is your destination for relaxation and rejuvenation in Southwest Michigan. Get ready for a retreat in the woods. MAC offers comprehensive services tailored to your needs, including massage, facials, nails, waxing, and hair treatments, ensuring you feel refreshed and beautiful. Whether you're preparing for a special occasion or simply treating yourself, the experts at MAC are committed to helping you look and feel your best. Their commitment to wellness isn't just about beauty. It's about balance, confidence, and feeling amazing in your skin. Visit them today and discover why they're Southwest Michigan's premier choice for all your beauty needs. Looking for some time away from the chaos of everyday life? Step into the beauty of Fernwood Botanical Garden, where nature, peace, and renewal come together. Nestled along the scenic St. Joseph River Valley in between Niles and Buchanan, Fernwood's 105 acres of lush gardens, quiet trails, and serene woodlands offer a sanctuary for replenishing your soul. Wander through vibrant landscapes, listen to the melodies of birds, and connect with nature at your own pace. Indoors, you'll find an inspiring art gallery, a lush fern conservatory, and a welcoming cafe, perfect for reflection and relaxation. At Fernwood, there's always something to discover, from engaging classes and special events to charming, verdant venues for your own gatherings. It's more than a destination, it's a feeling, a place to breathe, learn, and grow. Plan your visit today. Explore, discover, connect.
In the mood for coffee, tea,
yummy pastries, or cool swag? My friends at Infusco have got you covered. Infusco Coffee Roasters is a cozy neighborhood coffee joint in Sawyer and St. Joseph, Michigan. Infusco stands for a healthy community. They craft irresistible seasonal drinks, sourcing local artisans' products. The flavors shine from quality ingredients, and their beans are roasted on site. They do not hide behind tons of sugar. Every time I go, I'm greeted by my name with a smile. Bad service is just non-existent. It feels like stepping into a friend's living room. They keep it personal. Old school eclectic coffee mugs on the wall, fun merch, including stickers designed by artists, t-shirts, and sweatshirts. It's the perfect place to get to know your neighbors and chat with tourists. You will always find people deep in conversation. Special events keep it fresh. Community, health, the heart of Sawyer. That's Infusco. I hope to meet you there. What is a typical, and I'm sure this depends on what type of surgery it is, of course, it can't be an umbrella statement necessarily, but maybe give us sort of an idea of what it would be like. Say you do have to go in and get some type of surgery on your back or spine. What is the recovery generally like?
So as you alluded to, it depends on the nature of the procedure that you have. Mm-hmm. The smallest procedures that we do are endoscopic procedures, mm-hmm. where we go in with little cameras and work in very specific places. So the ones I do that fit that description are endoscopic rhizotomy. That's where I go with the camera along the facet joint. And I basically cleave a joint, a nerve causing pain around that joint. Okay. I use an annulator to burn that nerve. If I do that procedure on both sides of the back, typically it's at two or three levels. Most patients recover within 7 to 10 days. It's very quick, very quick. And a lot of people are surprised by that. Mm-hmm. If I do an endoscopic procedure where I'm going after a specific disc, that's also a very tiny incision. I'm going to a very specific place. Once I get the disc out, oftentimes patients have immediate relief of pain. Mm. And recovery is dependent upon the restrictions that I place, because the hole that I've created has to heal with scar. And for most people, they need at least 4 to 6 weeks for that scar to fill in enough to become more active. Mm-hmm. So the initial surgical recovery is about 7-10 days. However, the restrictions may remain until 4 to 6 weeks before I let you do more. Mm-hmm. And that's just so you don't have any setbacks. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. From there on, the nature of the procedures get bigger and bigger, and the recovery time also gets extended. But for the most part, I say most people are very active and back to their lives between 6 weeks to 3 months post-op.
And here's something I think that people don't necessarily think about either, is the better shape you're in, the better care you take care of yourself to begin with going into a surgery, even if it's a bigger one, your chances are better at having a faster, smoother recovery. Would you agree with that?
Mm. Absolutely, yeah. Some patients come to me in physical therapy prior to surgery, and they'll say, should I stop PT before going in? The answer is no. Keep going to physical therapy, keep strengthening, maintain whatever flexibility you have, because all those gains will pay dividends post-op and get your recovery even quicker.
What type of conditions, whether they're skeletal, musculoskeletal, or another organ system, might mask or manifest as back pain?
Some people have problems in the kidney that can manifest as back pain, mm-hmm. Because that's often in the back, radiating backwards. So a lot of people can have kidney stones or other ailments within the kidney that can manifest as back pain. Some patients can have, unfortunately, cancerous conditions, mm-hmm. That can manifest as back pain. And it's not unusual for us to make a diagnosis of something new for a patient who's just having back pain. Mm-hmm. Some people can have endocrinologic issues where they're imbalanced and that's causing issues with their bone, and they have little microfractures to the bone and pain stemming from that. So there's a variety of things that can also manifest as back pain, even though there's a primary cause of that.
What about if there is like arthritis, say inflammation in a joint that's further up or further down the chain? Can that manifest as back pain too?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because if you have arthritis in one part of your body, it causes you to compensate and put stress into your lower back. So that can absolutely manifest. I've actually had patients who've had problems with other joints. They've had problems with their hips, problems with their knees, and it refers to their back. And they often think that's where it's coming from. But with a good physical exam, we can then localize that it may be coming from elsewhere and not the back necessarily. So that's why I don't like making diagnoses and giving plans virtually. It's better if I physically am with you, can do an exam, feel where your pain's coming from, really listen to you and correlate your exam to your history. That's why we call medicine more of an art as opposed to just rote.
Mm-hmm. You know, you'll hear people say this sometimes, I threw my back out, or my back seized and I couldn't move. What is that indicating? What generally does that mean?
That generally means that your back is in spasm, that you've done something to cause spasms to mm-hmm. the large muscles in your back. Mm-hmm. And it almost knocks you to your knees. It takes your breath away. And that can occur just from the muscle being irritated, or it can occur from a herniated disc. Some people have baseline arthritis and they go through episodes of irritation where maybe they just exert too much on any given day and they have all these inflammatory mediators that can manifest as stress and spasms. And then they'll say, oh, I threw my back out. Mm-hmm. But after a few days, proper medication and rest, they tend to get better.
So those are the indications where you would be resting versus a blanket statement of saying, don't move at all after or before a surgery. There are times when you do need to actually rest.
There are times where you need to rest. Yeah. If you're having severe back pain without any radiation into your legs, without any other weakness or any other concerning symptoms, then you want to take it easy to get that inflammation to calm down. Mm-hmm. Many people that can take anywhere from 48 to 96 hours. So just slow down during those periods of time, start with anti-inflammatories, perhaps take acetaminophen on top of that and just listen to your body and let the resolution of your symptoms determine what you do next.
So let's talk about other conditions, common conditions like scoliosis, lordosis. Can you explain those conditions and how we can prevent and treat once they're there and maybe not allow them to become worse?
Absolutely.
Stop the progression.
Absolutely. So scoliosis oftentimes is seen in adolescence. There's adolescent idiopathic scoliosis. So the best way to manage that is to make sure you see an orthopedic surgeon or your pediatrician early on so they can do a measurement. Any child who has not reached skeletal maturity as of yet, can be braced, and the brace can prevent the curve from getting too big. Mm-hmm. If the curve gets to 45, 50 degrees, at that point, there's a good chance it will keep progressing throughout adulthood, and those patients tend to require surgery. So as an adult, if you already have a curve that's over 50 degrees for whatever reason, then that's not something you can just manage conservatively. A curve over 50 by definition will progress. So in that case, you have to see an orthopedic surgeon. There has to be a plan to correct the curve and contain it so it doesn't progress throughout life. A curve that gets too big affects the internal organs, the heart and the lungs, and cause a poor quality of life. So that's why we tend to deal with these aggressively if the numbers are too high. If you have scoliosis below, say, 40 degrees by the time you reach skeletal maturity, then it's just a matter of core strength and flexibility and being healthy, but we're not too concerned about the curve itself. If you start developing arthritis on top of that, then that's a different issue. Okay. Some adults have what we call adult degenerative scoliosis. And when that happens, you start developing curves as your spine degenerates. Mm. That's a whole different approach to treating that, because not only are you treating the arthritis, you're also treating the deformity. And some patients, they get very stiff and rigid, and the different osteotomies that we have to do surgically to get it corrected. So there's a spectrum of things that can manifest as scoliosis. You did mention kyphosis, which I'll just allude to very quickly. So with kyphosis, that's when your back's kind of bending over, and you know, like the old ladies who have that humpback look. You want to prevent that by having good bone strength. Because if you're osteopenic or osteoporotic, once you get older, or as you get older, you start getting microfractures, little tiny fractures in the bone because of the thin bone. And then that causes the back to start curving over. And unfortunately, once you start to kyphose, it's very hard to correct that, and you almost have to live with that. So the best bet against that is to maximize your bone strength so that doesn't even become an issue in the first place.
Do you see that becoming more of a problem with incorrect posture?
Yeah, incorrect posture, and also not having a good diet. So with incorrect posture, a lot of people get what we call tech neck, where you're kind of bent over and you're not really paying attention to your activities, having too much strain on the posterior musculature of both the neck and the back. And that overall form can lead us to having bad posture. And as I mentioned, having a poor bone health can also be a contributor. The worst case scenario is having a combination of both. So the best way to avoid the bad posture is to have postural awareness. Always be aware of your body. If you start aching or you start noticing you've been in the same position for too long, then sit up and make sure you're holding your chest out and you have good form. You have to be consciously aware of that in order not to fall into those patterns.
And I misspoke earlier, I have to say. I was thinking lordosis for some reason versus kyphosis. So thanks for catching that.
I knew what you
the other thing, so I'm thinking though, with posture, and we tell people, you know, that is something you will see people say very commonly. You know, you read about this, don't sit in a position too long. And then there are different prescriptions, like 3 for every 30, or, you know, set a timer. What would you suggest as an easy way to get into the practice of not being in a position for a long time?
I think using a timer is very helpful. So just having a timer set to every 90 or 120 minutes, just it goes off and you know, this is my time to take a break, stand up, change my position, maybe just do a little walk around the room, you know, just kind of reset, you know, and a good reset keeps us healthy. It shows awareness of our bodies, awareness of our health. You know, we get so caught up in work these days, we're on our computers for hours. Mm-hmm. We may not notice how time passes. It's hard. That doesn't happen in my world because I'm a clinician. I'm on the move all the time. I'm a surgeon on my feet, so I don't have to worry about that. But those of us who are on computers sitting down at desk jobs,
right,
be very aware of that.
Lifting things correctly to protect your back.
I am acutely aware of lifting because I've seen many, 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 many cases, innumerable cases where people have one bad lift, that one bad lift, and it causes a problem. Mm. One bad lift in the wrong position, and you get a herniated disc, it could change your life forever. So you have to make sure that everything you do with lifting involves your legs. Your spine has to be in line. So you have to be very aware of how you're lifting, what your form is, in order not to have that one traumatic, tragic incident that could change your life. So be aware of your legs, be aware of your posture, be aware of your spine. And with any activity, just be aware that you don't do anything to hurt yourself. The same way that, you know, you wouldn't run around on ice or do things that are risky to your other extremities. For your spine, lifting is what could be tremendously dangerous.
Okay.
So be very aware as you lift to use your legs and have that good balance so you don't have any problems back there.
So it kind of it comes back to good core strength.
Absolutely. Good core strength and awareness. I'm always aware when I lift something. I always think about my back. So I bend my legs. I make sure I have some good flex in my legs before I do anything arduous. Mm-hmm. That way I'm limiting the amount of stress that goes to my back.
And then as you mentioned, you've got to have good posture in there. So how do you talk to your patients about what proper posture looks like in different positions?
Absolutely. So there's actually a biomechanical diagram that shows where the forces are affecting the spine the most. Mm-hmm. The further out a weight is from the body, the greater the moment arm and the stress that goes back to your spine.
100%.
So closer to the center. Mm-hmm. That way that arc is not as pronounced and you're less likely to injure yourself. And also, having good core strength, having good leg strength, and just having awareness overall is a great way to avoid injuring your spine. A lot of people find doing core work a little difficult, but once you make it a habit, then you actually end up enjoying it. So during my workouts, I spend the first 10 to 20 minutes stretching and working my core before I do anything else. And if your core feels good, you're going to feel good overall.
And I would add to that, it doesn't matter, even if you think you're picking up something light, if you get in the habit of making sure you're using proper form, then you won't slip. Like, oh, I thought this was something that wasn't as heavy as it was necessarily. And I didn't use proper form, if that makes sense.
I agree with that 1,000%. Yes. Always have good form. That way, that just means you're aware. You're always, no matter how heavy the thing is, If you're picking up your kids, if your kids are little or your grandkids and you're so excited and happy, as soon as you make that bend down, your legs have to be involved immediately. That way, you know, I won't do anything to hurt myself.
What about people that carry bags on one side predominantly? Like I'm thinking of my husband. He carries this very heavy work bag with a lot of his computers and things in his bag. But you know, he's right dominant, right side dominant. So he'll
favor that shoulder. And I'm starting to become worried that that's going to cause some imbalance.
That is a very good worry for you to have. And I've actually had issues myself doing that. Mm-hmm. My surgery bag with my loops and my computer. Mm-hmm. To have it on the strap on just one side. Mm-hmm. I started to get spasms around my scapula, my lower back. And the only way that I could balance that out was actually by using a backpack. So I know we're used to using backpacks when we're younger, and you know we don't think you know backpacks are quote unquote cool enough as we get older. But actually, backpacks help to distribute the weight more evenly. So there are professional looking backpacks that I think we should think about. If your carrying case gets to a certain size, then you just have to have that weight distributed more evenly. So get a good backpack, a nice professional backpack, and I think that will allay a lot of that stress. Fantastic. And you can make it look really cool. You can get a really nice leather. You know, that's a gift idea for your husband.
Absolutely.
For his birthday or the next holiday.
Okay, so other things to think about. I wonder myself about choosing the right mattress. You see, you drive up and down the street and there are so many places offering, you know, mattresses. It can be very overwhelming. And how do you know what pillow to choose? That makes a difference, right? And how do you go about choosing what's correct for you to support good back health?
Absolutely. A mattress is critical. I made the mistake, and I have a personal anecdote, and that caused me to be very aware of it. So I changed my mattress maybe 10 years ago, and I went into the store, and it wasn't customized, and they had these nice gel mattresses that had a lot of give, and it looked nice. I got it. And for about 3 days, miserable pain every day, every morning I woke up. I never felt that way before. Mm. I took it back and I said, hey, what's going on here? And so, you know, the firm mattresses will give you a little more support. Then I delved a little deeper and started doing research. And that's when I realized that firm mattresses give you a lot more support. When in doubt, make sure you get a firm mattress, because that just gives you more support, supports your spine better, prevents the contours of your body from just giving into the mattress itself, and keeps you in line. And the better in line you are, the less likely you are to develop pain. That also goes with your pillow. Don't have a pillow that's too high, because a pillow that's too high will have a tendency to put too much strain on your neck. So you want to have a pillow that's not too high and firm. Mattress is also firm as well, maybe with a little pillow top, but firmness overall, and that gives you the best support. When it comes to stores and where to get a mattress, I found that the best stores are the ones that have professionals that actually do sleep questionnaires on you to find out what kind of sleeper you are. Stomach sleeper, side sleeper, back sleeper. Mm. And then they'll have you lay on different mattresses and try to match you with the right mattress. Those type of places, I think, are the best places to get mattresses, because it's customized to you. And they'll do that for both the mattress and the pillow.
Can you talk about the link between stress and back pain?
Stress can definitely cause back pain. Stress alters the hormonal balance in our body. And the more cortisol there is in the body, the more pain we tend to get. Mm-hmm. Our backs have a lot of muscle, a lot of areas that can be very vulnerable to cortisol. So high stress situations absolutely cause a lot more pain in the back. What I tell people is if you are going through a lot of stress, make sure you're taking anti-inflammatories and add a massage routine into your life. Because during those times, a good masseuse will find those tension areas and they'll say, oh, you have a knot, quote unquote, knot in your back, and kind of work those knots, work out those stress areas and get things a little better balanced for you. So stress can absolutely cause back, neck pain. And during those times, emphasize self-care a little more. Be cautious with what you're consuming diet-wise. Use anti-inflammatories, over-the-counter Tylenol if needed, and add massage to your routine.
So it's not an indulgence. You know, it's in the zeitgeist. It's like, oh, if you want to go for some pampering, you go for a massage. I personally get one every month because I do think it's part of my overall healthy routine.
Absolutely. It's not pampering. It's part of our health maintenance. The same way, especially a lot of our ladies will get manicures and pedicures to take care of themselves. The back massage should be part of the routine as well. So that's a gift package your husband should get. Yes. Now we're balanced.
Absolutely. what are good medical screenings to keep your back healthy?
So a good medical screen is getting a bone density test early on to have a sense of where you are in the spectrum. This is especially important for women as they're getting to middle age, maybe if you're on the thinner side, because you've had less kind of less stresses to your mm-hmm. bones, like modeling. So, mm-hmm. you're more likely to get osteoporosis, osteopenia. Mm-hmm. So you want to know where you are and make the proper adjustments. Those of us who are darker tend to get less vitamin D. So you have to get external sources of vitamin D potentially. So get the testing early on. Have your diets, and maybe you need supplements to get proper vitamin D. I've had to actually take vitamin D myself.
Me too. Get my
numbers balanced. Mm-hmm. Calcium as well. And if you make those things a part of your routine early on, then it'll pay off for you down the road.
You started talking about disc health before. Can you talk about degenerating discs disease as well as herniation? Why those things happen and what we can do to help ourselves once they do happen, what modifications we might have, physical therapy tips, anything like that.
So degenerative disc disease occurs naturally as we get older, some people more than others. If you start having back pain, go in to get assessed to determine exactly what the source of pain is and what adjustments you need to make. Depending on the degree of degenerative disc disease that you have, you want to begin by doing physical therapy to strengthen your core, as I said, to make sure that you're optimized physically. Have anti-inflammatories at home that you can use whenever you have episodes where things are starting to become a little more symptomatic. Because even people who are young can be very active at times and feel back pain. And that can be a variety of things that causes the pain. And if it is genetic disc disease, have the anti-inflammatories, use something over the counter as part of a maintenance routine. There's nothing you can do to stop the progression of this disease, but the best way is to have a plan to manage the symptoms as they go along.
Okay.
It becomes more of an issue if you have symptomatic genetic disc disease that can manifest either as axial back pain, meaning persisting pain in the lower back, or pain that shoots down your leg from a herniation. So as the disc degenerates, it has less fluid, has less buoyancy, so it has a higher risk of herniating from different stresses because it's stiffer. Whenever a disc herniates posteriorly into the nerve, then it can cause what people call sciatica.
Yeah.
So if you start experiencing sciatica and it's been diagnosed by MRI from in the form of a herniated disc, then you may require physical therapy, perhaps an epidural injection or two. If it resolves that way, then you can move on with your life. If it does not resolve with physical therapy and injections, then you might need surgery in the form of a microdiscectomy or endoscopic discectomy, as I mentioned. An option that has now come into play in the last few years for axial back pain, pain just in the back that doesn't radiate into the legs, is a rhizotomy procedure where you go in with the camera and you cleave the extraspinal nerve around the facet. And that's a way to mediate axial back pain to keep things under control so you don't need anything bigger. So those minimally invasive procedures are surgical options that can prevent you from needing something bigger if managed on time.
What are the injections composed of? Is it steroidal injections? Is it a material like they'll do sometimes in joints?
Correct. So most of the injections are a combination of cortisone and marcaine. The marcaine works immediately, then the cortisone may kick in a day or two later, but it can cause long-lasting relief. Mm-hmm. And everyone's sensitivity to cortisone is individual. So patients will often ask me, if I get this one injection, how long will I be good for? And my answer is always, I don't know, because everyone's response is different. Mm-hmm. One person might get one injection and not need another one for an entire year, whereas another person may get an injection and need another one a week later because they're still symptomatic. So it's very individual, but most people do have a positive response. Just a matter of how long it's for.
What is the mechanism of action? How is that causing, alleviating the pain?
So the marcaine is similar to lidocaine that you may get when you go to the dentist's office. So that just anesthetizes the nerve completely. The cortisone acts as an anti-inflammatory because the pressure that's causing pain from a nerve is from inflammation. And then the cortisone acts as an anti-inflammatory, reducing the inflammation experienced by the nerve, and that manifests as having less pain. So people tend to think that the cortisone is shrinking the disc, but that's not what's happening. Mm. What's happening is the cortisone causes your nerve to have less inflammation, and then you feel less symptomatic. And then if you're lucky, that disc may then shrink over time through the body's natural processes. There's something called dural pulsation, where the movement of the dura and the mediators that come around the dura can then help shrink the disc over time. So if you have a good pain-free period over that period of time, that disc can shrink. But the cortisone causes less inflammation experienced by the nerve.
Are there precautions that we need to take then when we do have in terms of movement? Does that restrict the way we can move? Say you have, and I'm sure it would depend on where, right? You know, I've had students come in and say they have herniation in their neck versus lower down in the back. How does that affect, function, daily function? Right.
So it depends on the size and location of the herniation.
Okay.
So I can't give a prognosis for any individual patient without actually visualizing the herniation itself, because the radiologists oftentimes will have a lot of words and you're not quite sure exactly what they're describing. So that's why it's important for your spine practitioner to actually look at the image and then correlate the image to what you may be experiencing.
Okay.
If you have a small herniation that's not really impinging on a nerve, that's maybe central, then it could be part of the degenerative disc disease and it's not really clinically relevant.
Okay.
If it's more, if it's bigger and it's off to the side laterally and impinging directly on a nerve, then it could be more symptomatic. And based on how big it is, the different treatments that we then employ. So it just depends on the form and the way it manifests. Typically, herniations in the neck and the back, if they do become surgical, then we can access pretty easily and resolve pain. And the thoracic spine, the mid-back, it's more of a challenge because that's a stiffer area and we can't really access it easily. So thoracic pain, we tend to manage more conservatively in terms of physical therapy, perhaps adding acupuncture. So location and size determine how we manage each type of herniation.
So another quote-unquote alternative modality you're bringing up. So it's blending another modality that would help, would work, acupuncture.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Okay. I'm a big believer in acupuncture.
I like it too.
Yes. Yeah. Because a lot of patients who have myofascial pain, even nerve pain, by just tracing the path of the pain fibers, acupuncture has helped to resolve pain in a lot of patients who can then avoid something more invasive. Of course, the patients just have pain that doesn't really have a surgical form. You know, just because you're in pain doesn't mean there's a surgery I can offer you. So either the herniations aren't big enough or it's more of a degenerative pattern and not really something I can address surgically. So acupuncture is a great complement to help resolve pain in those people.
What I like in our discussion so far, in our chat so far, is I'm noticing that you're not running straight for surgery. You're looking at the patient, you're looking at the patient's lifestyle, what's actually happening, how they're being affected, and offering conservative treatment at all costs first before going to surgery.
Absolutely, because that's part of the art of medicine, right? So looking at each person, their history, their story, what's your pain, what's the pattern, how's it affecting you? That definitely affects the decision-making as to what to do. But also surgery does have certain consequences or risks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can never guarantee an outcome for any procedure I do. Every procedure has risks. So it's not worth you taking that risk if you haven't done the things that you can do to avoid the surgery in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
That way, if you know you've done everything else and you have no other choice, then you know that you're going in eyes wide open and willing to take the risk that involves to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make sure that you and I are on the same page. Because I've done this for, like you said, 20 years. So I've seen everything under the sun in terms of potential complications, either that I've been involved in cases or I've seen other colleagues involved in. And if you're that one person in a million, but it's you, it's a life changer. So I don't want anyone to undergo surgery unless you know you've exhausted all the options and you're going in for the right reasons.
What about fused vertebrae?
So meaning lumbar fusion surgically?
How common is it? Why does it happen? And treatments?
Why do some people have vertebrae that are congenitally
fused? Or stenosis. That's another thing that I have. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I'll answer the first question. So some people have what we call block vertebrae, where they have congenitally fused vertebrae. The advantage of that is there's no disc in between those vertebrae.
Mm-hmm.
So you're unlikely, you cannot get disc disease at that level, but on the downside, you have stiffness or yeah. you have a greater tendency to have stiffness because you have a little less movement. Mm-hmm. So it's a double-edged sword. Stenosis develops as we get older, as the space for the nerves gets smaller over time. So there are multiple changes that occur that can cause this to happen. Number one, you start having disc herniations. Number two, there's a tissue behind the spine called, behind the dura called the ligamentum flavum. And that tissue tends to get a little thicker as we age. Mm-hmm. And those two factors contribute to closing the space off for the nerves.
Okay.
Thirdly, if you have a disc, if you have spurs that come from the facet joints, those can also crowd the canal. Mm-hmm. And people who have congenitally smaller canals are more vulnerable to having stenosis because they had limited room to begin with. And as the space gets crowded from all these factors, then it can become symptomatic stenosis. So that's why we always look at the imaging. And as I said, it's very individual. Look at people's patterns and then interpret what they're experiencing from their specific patterns.
You have a wealth of experience. I'm sure you have some favorite anecdotes from your patients, do's and don'ts, cautionary tales, success stories. Anything you want to share?
The best stories are from patients who had very wonderful active lives, found their lives limited because they're having pain. They were afraid to get surgery. Finally, you know, they bite the bullet and say, you know what, let me get surgery done. They trust their surgeon. They do well in surgery. They do well with the post-op instructions, and then they get back to their lives. I'll give you two stories, one in the neck and one in the back. One in the neck, I had a patient who had multiple herniations in his neck, severe pain, radiating pain down his arm. He was a broadcaster, so he was afraid to get surgery. It might affect his vocal cords. But his pain got to a point where he just couldn't live with it anymore and chose to take the risk of surgery. And as I said, there's always a risk. Everything has a percentage. Even if 99% of surgeries go exactly as planned, if you're in that 1% and there's any issue, then you know it's not great. So thankfully, he was in a 99%. Surgery went absolutely perfectly, no complications. And within 2-3 months of performing the surgery, I did a 3-level cervical discectomy infusion, where I decompressed his neck in 3 places surgically. And he was back to broadcasting, back to singing on the choir with his gospel. And he was a very happy man, and that's been very gratifying. With the lumbar spine, I had a young lady, severe pain for months. She worked as a flight attendant, hadn't flown, and she had very exciting routes to Dubai and Singapore. And even as exciting as those routes were, she couldn't work because she was in terrible pain. Terrible leg pain, life very limited. And we did the injections, and we did the therapy, and got to a point where she just couldn't live with that pain anymore. Did a microdiscectomy on her, came back for the first visit, 2 weeks post-op, felt wonderful. She followed the instructions until we got to 6 weeks where she was restricted. Started therapy at 6 weeks, so we're back at 3 months. She was back to flying, loved her life, and that made my day. And that's what I live for.
Terrific. Any other tips do you want to share?
So the biggest tip is just be spine aware. You know, just be spine aware. If you're aware of your spine and aware of your spine health, then I think everything else falls into place. Because being spine conscious means you're going to be aware of your weight. You're going to be aware of what your core is doing. You're working your core. You're working your flexibility. And the spine basically governs everything else. So if you're spine conscious and spine healthy, everything else will come together with it.
Would you say that that covers what you think of as optimal health personally?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because being spine healthy causes me to be aware of my aerobic health, causes me to be aware of my spine, my core strength and my core health, causes me to be aware of how flexible I am. And just having that focus causes me to have overall a very healthy and fulfilling life. So I feel very blessed that spine is my focus because overall, physically, I feel great and I'll keep up this routine and be the biggest advocate for spine health around.
Terrific. Speaking of the spine, one thing we didn't cover, which might be a little confusing to those who don't know, can you talk about the correct spinal curvatures, why they're there and what they are?
Absolutely. So in the cervical spine, the correct curvature is a little bit of lordosis. Typically, most patients have, I'd say, you know, 20 to 40 degrees of lordosis in the cervical spine. And in the thoracic spine, it's kyphosis is the normal form. Mm-hmm. And I say normal kyphosis, anywhere 40, 50, maybe 60 degrees. The lumbar spine should be lordotic. That's the normal form. Mm-hmm. And typically, lordosis in lumbar spine, 40, 50 degrees is normal. As the spine starts to degenerate, then the forms start to change. And that's where we run into problems. So having healthy discs will have us have the correct alignment overall. Mm-hmm. And our job is just to maintain things as long as possible so we feel good for as long as possible in our lives.
Thank you so very much for being here. I learned a tremendous amount. And you have encouraged me to keep doing more of what I'm doing in helping people stay healthy with good posture and building good strength and stamina so that they can continue to live the lives that they want to live. I mean, that's basically what we've both been talking about here.
Absolutely. And we're living longer. So you may as well feel good as you live longer.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Wise women, move from last place to first place in your life. Stop using your body as a battlefield. Let's raise health together with a customized health plan just for you. Contact me at npkhealthintegration.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.